This talk comes out of my daily Bible reading, and it was some time ago, and I was looking, reading through the Gospels, and before that, my reading a Bible in a year gives me a chunk of Old Testament each day, and a chunk of New Testament, and Psalms, and some Proverbs, and I was noticing certain things, and there was one particular day in the bit in the Old Testament and the bit in the New Testament, I thought, why haven't I seen that before? And it might just be, of course, that you've all seen this and I'm blind. But I'm going to ask you, what is your takeaway from the miracles? There are, in the New Testament, specifically recorded 37 miracles performed by Jesus that are specifically told about. Now, I don't believe that that was all that he did. Why don't I believe? Because in John 21, 25, John says Jesus also did many other things. And if they were all written down, I suppose the whole world could not contain the books that would be written. Jesus was just wonderful at doing miracles, meeting people where they were. And we're going to look at some of these. So what sort of miracles did Jesus perform? Well, he healed the sick. There was supernatural provision. You think about a fish being caught with a gold coin in its mouth to pay the taxes. That's not natural, is it? He healed the lame and he healed the blind. He healed lepers. The fact that Jesus even went anywhere near a leper was a miracle, but he touched them, he healed them. He delivered people, he set people free. Now these days some people, oh, it wasn't demons, he had epilepsy. I don't care what it was. He set people free. And he raised the dead. That's kind of not normal, is it? That's a miracle. And he challenged nature. You think about the Jesus in the storm and he just says, be still. And nature goes, okay, you're the Son of God. And the lake was still. But I'm also aware, as someone has spoken here from the front quite a lot, that you start to tell certain stories and the congregation go into standby mode. Now, what do I mean by this? It means if I say, oh, we're going to talk about Jesus turning water into wine, in your head, you say something like, oh, I know where this is going. This is going to end up talking about the abundance of God's provision. So you go into standby mode, which means if there's something new comes to you, you go, oh, hadn't seen that before. But if not, you're not disappointed because you think you know where this is going. So we're going to play what gets you into standby mode on some of the miracles. So here we have Jesus turns water into wine and you have 40 great big water containers. And so we say, isn't God great? He over and abundantly provides. What about this one? This is the woman with the issue of blood that you find in Luke 8. She's been sick all this time. She spent all her money and she thinks, if I can just touch the hem of his garment. So what's our takeaway from that? No one. No one's heard this story before. No one's got any thoughts on it. You're thinking the woman's too young. Okay. See, I think that the preachers take it doesn't take a lot. You just need to come to Jesus. It doesn't have to be some great big thing. Just touch the hem of his garment, not garden. Right. What about Matthew 14? Here's Peter. And Jesus comes to him and he's walking on the water. And Jesus says, come on then. And Peter gets out the boat and he starts to sink. What's our takeaway from that? Keep your eyes on Jesus. Fine. Now you see where we're going. Okay, what about this one? That's Lazarus. Jesus says, come out, and Lazarus comes out the tomb. What's your takeaway from this story? Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Any other takeaways? He can do the impossible, yeah? Obey what Jesus says, yeah? Death's not the end. Thank you, Bet. Yes. Yeah, this is the tombs. You can imagine where we're going. Say my name. No. Also, I think about this story when someone comes and I say, can I pray for you? And you go, I've got no faith. How much faith do you think Lazarus had? Sometimes it's not about you. It's about what Jesus is saying. Okay, what about this one? This is a story of 10 lepers who come to Jesus and they all want to be healed and set free, and they know what Jesus can do. And Jesus heals them all and they go off, but one comes back, only one, and he says, thank you. So what do we learn from this? What's our takeaway? It's good to say thank you, yeah? Jesus specifically commended him for doing so. I think we should recognize the things that Jesus does in our lives and be a grateful people. Oh, what about this one? This is the classic of, we've been up all night. The picture doesn't do it justice, does it? We've been up all night, we've caught nothing, and Jesus says, throw your nets on the other side of the boat. These are professional fishermen, they know what they're doing. Obey what he says. Anything else? Even if it doesn't feel right, yeah? Maybe be prepared to try something new. Just because you've always done it that way doesn't mean you always have to. And these are the sort of messages that once we start talking about them, actually, when I start talking about them from the front, this is when I see people going to standby mode, because they go, yeah, I know what that message means. I'll sit back, I'll wait for something new. So, what about this one? Anyone guess where this story's going? Feeding of the 5,000 with fishes and loaves. Correct. And what's our takeaway from this story? What puts you into standby mode on this story? No. May I ask the members of the jury to disregard the last lady's comments? God's abundant provision. Sorry? All right. What about, it doesn't matter how much you've got, just bring whatever you've got and God will use it? Something like that? Well, what I'd like to do is look at a little bit more at this story, or these stories. There are three episodes in the Bible where bread and fish are multiplied. Three. Can anyone tell me where the first one of those might occur? Have a guess. Manna for heaven. I've not included manna from heaven because it was more like coriander seeds, it says. So I've not included manna. But anyone else? No, but you're closer. Genesis, this is where we are. 2 Kings. There are 100 men fed in 2 Kings. I want you to read this because there's some interesting bits here. Oh, I'm going to have to read it from this one. Elisha returned to Gilgal and there was famine in the region. In other words, there is nothing to eat anyway. And a man came from Baal Shalshazar, bringing the man of God 20 loaves of barley, baked bread from the first ripe grain, along with some new heads of grain. Give it to the people to eat, Elisha said. How can I set this before 100 men, his servant asked. But Elisha answered, give it to the people to eat, for this is what the Lord says. They will eat and have some left over. Then he set it before them, and they ate, and they had some left over, according to the word of God. This is the first example I could find where bread was multiplied, but not just multiplied, not just enough, there's some left over. So then the second one is the feeding of the 5,000, plus women and children. Estimates make this crowd somewhere around the 10 to 15,000 people in total. Let's look at this one. It says, as evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place, and it's already getting late, so send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food." And Jesus replied, "They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." And we have here only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, they answered. "Bring them here to me," he said. And he directed the people to sit down on the grass. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people. They all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. The number of those who ate was about 5,000 men, besides women and children. So that's the second example. And then we have the third, which is the feeding of the 4,000 plus women and children. Some people I know think, oh, they got it all mixed up when they wrote the Bible. There was only one example of this, but there are two clear examples. The feeding of the 5,000, the feeding of the 4,000. And what does the feeding of the 4,000 say? At about this time, another large crowd. And the people ran out of food again. Almost like they're getting used to this running out of food business. Jesus called his disciples and told them, "I feel sorry for these people. They've been here with me for 3 days and they've got nothing left to eat. If I send them home hungry, they will faint along the way, for some of them have come a long distance." His disciples replied, "How are we supposed to find enough food to feed them out here in the wilderness?" Jesus asked them, "How much bread do you have?" "7 loaves," they said. So Jesus told the people to sit down on the ground. Then he took the 7 loaves, thanked God for them, broke them into pieces. He gave them to his disciples, who distributed the bread to the crowd, and a few small fish were found too. So Jesus also blessed these and told the disciples to distribute them. They ate as much as they wanted. Afterwards, the disciples picked up 7 large baskets of leftover food. There were 4,000 men in the crowd that day, and Jesus sent them home after they had eaten. Now, the reason, just so you're aware, the reason it talks about men being fed, culturally, and we have to understand the culture of the time, they would have recorded how many men were there, not necessarily how many women and how many children. It's not like the women and children weren't important. For some reason, that culture decided that's how they were doing it. So we've got the feeding of the 100, the feeding of the 5,000, the feeding of the 4,000, and each time they eat all they want, and then there's some left over. Jesus starts with a little bread and fish. And then, interestingly, if you watch, Jesus asks the disciples to distribute it. I think sometimes when we're looking for God to do stuff, we're looking for him to do it supernaturally, but he actually wants to get us involved in the process, because we are his disciples. And so we get involved in giving out from the little to the many. It was said earlier, Tracy talked about taking something that we've got and giving it away. We're going to come back to that. They ate as much as they wanted and were satisfied. Come back to the thing that Sandra talked about manna in the desert. Do you remember when they picked up manna in the desert in Exodus, and they could gather so much each day and they were fully satisfied? But if they tried to hang on to anything, it went rotten overnight. But they were fully satisfied. And here's the key for me. In each of these episodes, there were leftovers. This reminded me of another story. This is a story of Elisha. It happens in 2 Kings 4 as well. And there's a... Tell you what, let's read it. Here we go. "One day, the widow of a member of the group of prophets came to Elisha and cried out, My husband who served you is dead, and you know how he feared the Lord. But now a creditor has come threatening to take my two sons as slaves. What can I do to help you? Elisha asked. Tell me what you have in the house. Nothing at all except a flask of olive oil, she replied. And Elisha said, borrow as many empty jars as you can from your friends and your neighbors. Then go into your house with your sons and shut the door behind you. Pour the olive oil from your flask into the jars, setting each one aside when it is filled. So she did as she was told. Her sons kept bringing jars to her, and she filled one after another. And soon every container was full to the brim. Bring me another jar, she said to one of her sons. There aren't any more, he told her. And then the olive oil stopped flowing. And when she told the man of God what had happened, he said to her, now sell the olive oil, pay your debts, and you and your sons can live on what is left over. Yes, we could talk about abundance, but I think there is something key going on here. As often as the new jars were bought, they were being filled. So I have a question about the baskets. When Jesus and the disciples picked up 12 baskets, you can have a basket, have a basket, have a basket, take them around. There we are, Cedria. Yeah, I know you wanted one as well. Have a basket. Have a basket. Have a basket. There we go. We somehow get in our minds, don't we, this little picture of baskets not dissimilar to your carrying. And you think there's 5,000 people being fed and 12 basketfuls filled. I don't think they were baskets like that. I think they were more baskets like this. And where did the baskets come from? If you think you're all going out to follow Jesus, where did suddenly 12 or 7 empty baskets come from? You see, I think if there had been 50 baskets, a bit like the jars with olive oil, they'd have kept on being filled. Now, David Pawson. David Pawson had this concept. I remember him speaking and saying, of course, there were only 12 baskets because the 12 disciples had already taken their packed lunches and that was what was left. I'm not convinced. You see, I think there just happened to be 12 baskets on one occasion and 7 baskets on the other that people happened to have with them for whatever reason. And that's how they picked up the leftovers. So I've got 3 questions for you, because I believe that when Jesus moves among us, there is always an abundance and there are always leftovers. So what happened to those baskets of leftovers? We know that they were fully satisfied. We know that they didn't need to eat anymore. I think they took them back to the villages, to where they lived. There would have been people there that hadn't been there. And they're saying, what was he like, that Jesus chap then? You'll never believe what happened. Look. Look. There were only 5 loaves and 2 fishes. Look, this is what was left over. And this is only a little bit of it. There was loads. You see, I think we have the capacity and, if you like, the challenge. Even Tracy said it right at the beginning. I was so grateful you spoke. What are we going to do, not just with what God's given us, but the leftovers? What are we going to do with the stuff that we can say, you should see what Jesus has done for me? Do you know, I love the fact he's not here, bless him. Steve's not here this morning, but he'll tell anyone that will listen that his life has changed beyond all measure since he met an angel and came to Jesus. That's his story. His wife loves the fact he comes to church. She didn't want anything to do with the God stuff, but she said to him, when you come home, you're a better person after you've been at church. Why? Because she's seeing some of the leftovers. So here's my questions. Will you bring a basket, or in modern times, a Tupperware, with the intention of taking something that God says to you on a Sunday morning or in your Bible studies or wherever you happen to be? Will you intentionally have a basket or some container with you so that you go, this is the leftovers, what God's given me. I'd love to share it with you. What will your takeaway from the miracles be? How can you communicate that good news that God is a God, or Jesus is Jesus, who loves to go against nature, who loves to produce something that's not expected, who loves to provide out of the impossible and produce the possible, who magnifies provision, who multiplies anything we have? What is your takeaway going to be? And thirdly, what are you going to do with it? If I had a basket full of manna, I thought, God's blessed me so much. I love it. Look, I've even got all the leftovers. And I take this home. It's just going to go rotten and have maggots in it overnight. We weren't designed to hang on to all that God's given to us. You've all gone very quiet. Gone the wrong way. Doesn't matter. I think that what God arrested me with was this whole concept of leftovers. We bypass it so often that we bypass the leftovers when we read the Bible because we're so focused on the miracle. And the miracles are great. But I wonder, what are we going to do with the leftovers that God gives us? Are we going to come with baskets, receptacles, and say, God, I don't just want what you've given me. I want something for someone else. Because I honestly, honestly believe God is still in the business of overproducing. You look at that first miracle of bread and of water into wine. 40-gallon water containers, loads of them. There was enough wine to keep the village drunk for a month. God delights in giving us leftovers. At home, when we have a Sunday lunch, or most meals these days, if there are leftovers, they go in a pot and they go in the fridge. And if I'm a very fortunate young man, old man, Sue will put pastry on it and produce leftover pie. Nothing better. Unfortunately, I know of many people who take the leftovers and just scrape them into the food recycling bin. Let us not do that with what God gives us. Let's make leftover pies and give them away. Okay, thank you.